Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished individual from Oregon, USA, Mr. John Davis. John, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Ashutosh. I'm really excited to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. John is the chairman of Brand New View, a leadership firm focused on helping businesses become a force for social and economic good. He was earlier with Nike, Transamerica Group, Informix, and others. He's just told me that he also lived for several years in Singapore. He's an author of 10 books, and all of you know that I'm very partial to authors. And he's got a new book, and we'll talk a little bit about it, which is titled Radical Business, How to Transform Your Organization in the Age of the Global Crisis. And this is very topical. So, John, let's start talking about Brand New View. Tell me a little bit about the organization, about the venture, and what made you start it.
Sure, that's great. So Brand New View actually has two histories to it. The current history and what it is right now, and what I am working on through it is leadership development, and primarily in a couple different ways. Number one is to help individual leaders in organizations, which is what the bulk of my work the past decade and a half has been around, as they make transitions, whether those transitions are into more senior roles of responsibility, or they're trying to take on more challenging tasks or trying to figure out ways how to navigate towards being more innovative. Maybe they've been stuck in a rut. That's one part of it. And the other piece of it is helping your organizations obviously make massive transformation organizationally as well. Mm-hmm. But Brand New View actually began about 22 years ago. I had left my last corporate job and started Brand New View initially as a brand strategy firm. And that came out of the first part of my career, which was around the idea of how organizations create brand reputations, marketing strategy in general. But one thing led to another, as things always do in careers, at least it did with mine. And I found myself suddenly in Singapore and was living there and teaching at a university and absolutely loved it. And so Brand New View just became a vehicle for my published work. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm back in the US, it's now my vehicle for the leadership development work that I do.
Amazing. So since you work so much on leadership, I'm going to ask you probably the million-dollar question that's been asked for thousands of years. Are leaders born or trained?
Oh, they're trained, but they're definitely not born, but it's trained, and there's a caveat to that. Obviously, we're all influenced by our social circumstances and our group of friends and our business networks and circumstances around the economy and everything else. You know, there's a lot of factors that kind of give inputs to how we get shaped as people. But what's interesting about all those different inputs is at some point we always find ourselves, whether as a kid or as we're growing up and into our adulthood, we suddenly find ourselves in a situation where we might not have realized we should have been there, but now we're being asked to lead, right? And maybe it's a team meeting because the boss stepped out and somebody's got to step in, or maybe it's something really fundamentally urgent and a crisis, but either way, that sort of moment arise where somebody has to step into something and make a decision. Mm-hmm. And those are certainly not planned. There's no textbook that tells you how to do that. Circumstances put you into a position to say, how do I deal with this now? Mm-hmm. Because there's no set of answers that tells me how to get through any particular challenging situation, except circumstances. And hopefully the collaborative spirit of the people you're with. And if they sort of trust you, then it's a really great way for you to kind of build and develop that leadership talent even further. But it's absolutely trained. It's not something you're born with.
Okay. And given the large number of people you must have worked with, is there a way to classify leaders? You know, there are leaders who are compassionate. There are leaders who are dictatorial. I'd love to get your perspective.
Yeah, well, there's obviously a fair amount of research about that too. There's six different leadership types, depending on which research you look at. Mm. I think people fall into different buckets depending on the circumstances. There are certainly examples of famous leaders who have always operated a certain way, and that was their reputation. But by and large, leadership tends to be situational. And if you're really good, and one of the things I learned living overseas is how to listen and to step back and not just assume you're being expected to provide the answer, but instead to see what others are dealing with so that you can maybe provide guidance and input. And that to me is that nuanced part of leadership that is really critical, right? In any kind of leadership setting. And that evolves over time.
Interesting. So, you know, when I was reading about you, there is a comment which says you transform your organization by creating positive value through addressing society's most pressing and urgent needs. Can you help me understand this comment with maybe an example or an anecdote?
Sure. Let me set the framework for that first, because society's most pressing needs, as we think about today, 2022, and we look at what's going on in the world, whether it's the global pandemic, COVID, whether it's climate crisis, whether it's social and economic injustice, if it's food insecurity, you name it. There's a number of factors that are substantial humanity-facing threats that we need to deal with. And in that context, the role of any organization is how do we help solve that, right? And the way I look at it is the role of business is to do that. Business actually has an opportunity to be at the center of a conversation with governments, with other partners, with other adjacent organizations, but to help drive solutions, to help solve these most vexing challenges. And interestingly, business has been on the periphery for a good part of the last century. I mean, not in a negative way. It's created a lot of economic wealth. The growth of middle classes around the world has been substantial. We know that. But there's also been some real departures between the haves and the have-nots. You've got some really important and imbalanced structures taking place that favor certain people over others. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be corrected. Now, as an example, let's talk about the area of pollution. So pollution we know is big. It's contributing to the climate crisis, and deforestation, other things are too. But are there organizations, for example, that deal specifically with that? And we know for sure that they do. One that I highlight in my forthcoming book that you mentioned, Radical Business, is an organization called Divergent 3D. Divergent 3D is founded by a gentleman, an entrepreneur by the name of Kevin Zinger. He's based in Los Angeles. And what Divergent 3D does is it has reinvented the auto manufacturing process.
Okay.
So if you take a look at how cars are built everywhere around the world, whatever the manufacturer, they all kind of funnel, they follow the same fundamentals, right? They began 112 years ago. It was a massive factory. You had an assembly line. Yeah. It takes up acres of land. It's huge carbon footprint, as we've now learned over time. And there's a lot of inefficiencies in the process. And yes, we have EVs coming out, which are making a big difference, but they're still manufactured the same way. So what Kevin Zinger did is with Divergent 3D is he basically took a clean sheet approach. And he said, knowing what I know about the industry, because he'd spent a lot of years in the industry prior to that, if I were to look at every single facet of the production of an automobile, what would it take to completely reinvent it? What do I need to do to reduce the waste, to reduce the pollution, to have partners on board who have who share the same fundamental values about minimizing inputs, having better materials usage and all that stuff. And in fact, what he has created is a system called DAPS, which is Divergent Adaptive Production System. It's protected by 475 patents. He has now manufactured the world's fastest car. It's called the 21C. And it's built on re-atomized materials. They basically have no waste. They can produce a car very quickly. It's very fast. It's a hybrid car, so it's much more environmentally friendly. Yeah. And because of the materials usage, it also reduces the actual weight in the car, which reduces the footprint and the wear and tear on automobile and parts. And when they need to change and fix parts, they can re-atomize the parts through the production process. And it's done in a building, not in a huge multi-acre facility. So it's pretty impressive what they've done. And that's a great way to look at something where we would think it's impossible, right? How do you take something we've done for 112, 120 years that's done a certain way and it's honed and everybody knows how to do it in that industry and completely turn it upside its head? Well, Divergent 3D is an example of that. And that's really a force for good, because what they're saying is we no longer need these massive footprints of facilities. And it's going to, and by the way, what's interesting about it is it doesn't have to apply to just cars. His process can apply to any manufacturing capability. It's pretty remarkable.
Amazing. And, you know, moving on again, you have a term called Mazi gathering. I'm not sure if I have the right word right.
That's it.
Yeah. How can a Mazi gathering help in creating a positive impact?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the Mazi Gather, I borrowed from the Greek language on that, and it's about being together. Okay. And the simple idea behind Mazi, and COVID interrupted the process, but the idea behind Mazi is we get together with a group of executives or a group of leaders. It doesn't just have to be business people. It could be leaders from all sectors of society. Mm-hmm. No more than 20. Do it over a course of a really relaxed meal, and you break into conversation around issues of importance to them, guided by some people you might bring in who are either experts, but it's not an academic talk, mm-hmm. and it's certainly not a classroom setting. It's actually an opportunity for them to just depart from their day jobs, sit around with each other, and try to resolve something that is challenging all of them, but during the course of their day jobs, they simply can't address it. So it's a new form for bringing people together. Mm-hmm. And what's important about that is we all wear certain personas, right? I know you talk a lot about brand personas, and I think it's a really important notion. It's incredibly important because it's our reputation. And those personas inhabit what we do and how we show up at work during the day. Mm-hmm. But we often want to get back at night and with our families or other people and talk about things that we can't necessarily talk about directly with our colleagues. Mm-hmm. So a Mazi gathering is an opportunity to do that. Can I give you an example?
Yeah, yes, please.
So what spawned this was years ago, I was in London, and mm-hmm. My wife and I were traveling through. I was giving a talk there. And afterward, there was a group of about 50, 60 people at this wonderful dinner. And the conversation around the dinner, there was a seed that was planted. And the seed that was planted was, the conference that I was speaking at was about sports. Mm-hmm. And the seed that was planted is, has commercialization taken over sport to the point that it's no longer fun or interesting to fans? You know, mm-hmm. the global sponsorships, the massive companies and whatnot. And that simple question set off about a 90-minute debate. Now, as you know, in the UK, they love debate. So it's just everybody starts diving in and talking, and it's incredibly impassioned and very well informed and a wide range of perspectives. It's actually something you don't see a lot of in the US because people, I think, for some reason, culturally feel constrained. Mm-hmm. And yet when you get into something like a Mazi gathering, that's the spirit we're trying to capture. Let's have an unfettered debate where we can actually deal with these issues in a way that's energizing. It may not solve it, but it gets us to think differently. And we can't do it in the context of a typical board meeting or a workplace meeting with colleagues.
Fascinating. And how do you manage emotions in a Mazi gathering?
Well, the good news is they don't get out of hand too badly. And and people, I think there's a set of norms we all ascribe to. Mm-hmm. And so most people are generally pretty well behaved in that regard. But you're right. I mean, you can get impassioned people that can shut down elements of the conversation. At that point, it's the role of anybody, not just the person organizing it. It's the role of anybody to say, hey, maybe that's a little bit off topic, or let's park that for a moment and come back to that and try to get us back on track. You know, sometimes crowds themselves have a good way of manipulating the situation positively to quell the emotion that might otherwise erupt.
Well said. So coming back to leadership, John, you know, you have lived in, you've worked in over 40 countries.
Yeah.
And one major factor that impacts leadership is culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what you see in Japan, what you see in America, what you see in India, what you see in the Middle East are very, very different types of leadership patterns. I'd love to get your perspective on how does culture impact leadership?
I love this question, and thank you for asking it. And what's for me, it's also a very personal question for a number of reasons. When you mentioned earlier, when I lived overseas in Singapore for a number of years, and when we first moved over there, I'd done a lot of international travel over the course of my career, but I'd never lived overseas other than for several months during my university days. So it never had been something I'd done before. But when I lived in Singapore and I started traveling across Southeast Asia and across the Middle East and across South Asia and everywhere, over time, you begin to pick up the nuances and patterns and difference of across cultures and how people interact with each other. Mm. And what was most, I think, important for me, as you know, Americans kind of have a reputation for being brash, cocky, loud, demonstrative, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Probably all the things I'm displaying right now in this conversation. But what was interesting about it is in those settings, if I'm in Thailand, you know, there's a very particular way that I have to show up. The people have to show up.
Correct.
And it's a different level of sort of listening. It's a different level of being attuned to what's going on. It's being open-minded for sure. And giving people an opportunity to simply express themselves, right? Without jumping in, without trying to solve it, without leaping to solutions. And then seeing it change, because bordering on Thailand is Malaysia. Right next to each other, very different cultures, right? Or if, you know, where you are, if you go to India, South India is very different from North India.
Absolutely.
Right? And the cultural nuances there are powerful. And you've got to be able to recognize when you're in Gujarat, it's a very different kind of lifestyle and perspective than you might have if you're down in Bangalore in that area.
Mm.
So yeah, I think culture plays a huge role.
Absolutely. Fascinating. So John, let's move to your books now. I want to come to your new book in a few minutes, but I'd love to understand what has led you to write so many different books and what are some of the areas that you have written about?
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. So the theme throughout has been around this large umbrella of value creation. But within that, you know, my domain expertise, if you had to call it that, over the course of my career has been in marketing and strategy and branding. Mm-hmm. And so I started off writing in marketing areas. I wrote several books on marketing metrics. Mm-hmm. How do you, as marketers are not always the best at measuring things, right? At least that was the reputation up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, you need to know what the metrics are in order to describe and defend your plans for the business.
Hmm.
But I also been, since I was a youth, very passionate about sports, and in particular the Olympics, but all sports. I mean, after living in Asia, I love cricket. I mean, I did not grow up with cricket. Now I love cricket, and 2020 is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I wrote a number of books on sports about what sponsors, the Olympic sponsors, get out of sponsoring the events. Mm-hmm. I've written about sports marketing more broadly across a wide range of global sports, including mm-hmm. ICC and IRB rugby and whatnot. And so that was fascinating to me because it's what is it that sports brings to the equation for organizations as they sponsor it that makes it appealing for them. And there's sort of a halo effect that occurs. You want to be associated with something powerful and magnetic like a sport. And I wanted to break that down and understand that a bit more. And then the third area has been sort of around strategy and what creates strategic success for organizations. And that sort of set me on the path to the current book that's coming out that you've mentioned on radical business. But one of the books that I did just a few years back was about higher education and what global higher education needs to do in a world that's rapidly changing. And it's only accelerated. That book came out in 2016, and the changes have been dramatic. What we predicted in the book as a 10-year horizon became a 4-year horizon. So it's really pretty amazing that, you know, these differences that I try to write about. And it's all around this idea of value creation.
Fascinating. Well, maybe I'll have to have some other conversations with you on branding and strategy.
Love to. Anytime. You
know, but let's come to your book on that's being released now on Radical Business, How to Transform Your Organization in the Age of the Global Crisis. So I'd like to understand from you, based on our research that you must have done, how has the pandemic impacted global organizations?
Yeah, well, it's impacted it significantly, and I'm going to come to that. Let me set up a precedent to this, just to give you some context for this too. What drove me to focus on the book and what became sort of the series of different templates and blueprints within the book for how businesses can transform originated from conversations that began about a decade and a half ago. And at the time when I was doing executive education work in those days and talking to leaders of companies like yourself and getting a sense of what it is that keeps them awake at night, what's their anxiety. And bringing that fast forward, I continued those conversations and did interviews in all 40 countries and beyond, met with hundreds of people. And there was a particular theme that really almost aggravated, not all, but about 85% of the leaders. And that is they felt like they had not done enough to be valuable contributors to society. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that they weren't successful in running a great business. It was profitable. Their shareholders are happy. It was that they felt they hadn't done enough to actually create additional value for society beyond just the sale of products and services. And that led to why I wanted to pursue the the book itself and this idea of radical business. And in fact, within the book, I have it's divided into three sections. So the first section is called value meaning, what an organization needs to do to find meaning, why it's here in the first place. Then the second section is about value measure. How do you measure the things that you're going to do? And the third section is about value mobilization. How do you bring it to life? How do you execute against that? And then there's a series of transformational steps that any business anywhere can undertake. But the bottom line is that it's intended to help businesses that are on the periphery of sustainability or social justice or economic inequality, and to dive into it now. To say, here's what you need to do to revamp operations, because if you don't, you will be on the outside looking in, and the world around us is changing much faster. You mentioned to me, I think before we started recording this, but you talk a lot about, and I think it very rightfully so, there's a generation now that is looking at the world through a different lens. And the lens they're looking at it through right now is saying, what are the organizations doing that demonstrates care and concern for the biggest problems we have? And they're all the problems we've talked about. And if they, and the survey show globally, it doesn't matter about the country, globally, consumers under about the age of 40 are saying, we will only support brands and companies that have a demonstrable application and actions around sustainability or pandemic or things like that. So now to the pandemic, what the pandemic has done, we've all seen it. Mm-hmm. We're having a conversation here on Zoom, right? Yep. And of course, Oregon to New Delhi is quite a distance. And we'd have had to find a meeting point somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The reality of it is, you know, we have now found that the virtual environment can be productive. Mm-hmm. We've also found it can be very wearing, as we know, in terms of families and the way it changes how we run our lives out of our homes, if we're fortunate enough to be able to work out of our homes on behalf of the work we do for our companies. And I don't think even when the pandemic ends, and I'm not alone in this, I don't think when it ends, it's going to change. I think you might see some people going back to the office, but it's not going to be like it was before. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is, I think it's made people, all of us, most of us, very aware of the health consequences of not following protocols, whether it's mask wearing or washing our hands or vaccinations or any of the things that are sensible health-based issues. But the third thing that's caused change, and you've seen it here in the US, is it's become political,
right?
Which makes no sense to me, because health is not a political statement. It's a biological issue. And it shouldn't have anything to do with politics at all. But unfortunately, it's created sort of this perverse social effect. And you've got people who don't believe that it's real, or that it can harm them. And that's a different social dynamic that I think is much more complex, much more challenging, and probably much longer haul to fix, because that means there's systemic challenges in society that need to be addressed. And I don't know how to address those.
Amazing. Well, it's a tough situation in every country. But John, on that note, I would want to end, but I want to ask you one last question. Sure. When is the book being released, and is it going to be available on Amazon, and what is the exact title?
It's going to be released in April. I think it's April 19th, 2022. It is on Amazon right now. I think it's also on Barnes & Noble. It's on Google Play. It's on my publisher's website. My publisher is Emerald Publishing. So so it's on all of those. And it's called Radical Business, How Organizations Can Transform, or How to Transform Your Organization in the Age of Global Crisis.
Wonderful. So I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out the book and then take your own call. But I will certainly place an order for that book, because it's fascinating to understand your perspective on how organizations can transform themselves in the difficult situation we face all over the world. But on that note, John, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me at such length about all the amazing work that you're doing. I really enjoyed listening to you and your thoughts on Mazi gathering. I think that's something I had never heard of before, but thank you for educating me on that. And thank you for talking to me about your books. So thank you and good luck.
Absolutely, Ashutosh. Thank you as well. But one last thing I was going to say, when your book comes out, I want to hear about it, because I want to get it. Your experience and the things you've done is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast. a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.